Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real Feel Good Radio.
Hi everybody, this is part two of our two-part conversation with Dr. Jonathan Hardy.
I have done the speech there, I'm sorry, but the topic touched me.
I agree with you, Nala, that I definitely feel for young people. I think it's always difficult to be a young person, but the challenges young people are facing now are so great. And ultimately, you know, the solution to our problems is spiritualization of consciousness, and, both personal and families and communities, nationally, internationally. Because what does that mean? It means moving out of ego consciousness, attuning more with the soul, which has all the good stuff: joy, peace, calmness, love, compassion. Homeopathy can facilitate that.
Thank you, Ken. Let's move on. We have shown the spiritual effect, and we know that this helps, but you have done such amazing work. And there was a question that I was thinking I will be asking you. When patients walk into your doors and you are going to distinguish their energy, how do you distinguish their energy and their experience, their inner experience, that they need something extraordinary or not a well-known plant or polycrest remedy? Like, how do you see that in your practice?
The first thing I'd say is, you know, it's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? When you think about it, someone's walking in and you've maybe for an hour and a half and you've never met them before, usually. And the fact is, they could need anything. And when you think about it, oh, I've got to find that one thing in the material world or even beyond that resonates with this person's state, it's mad. You know, really? How on earth do you do that? And I think an important thing, first of all, is being comfortable with not knowing, or at least having the courage to sit in that uncomfortable place, because the rational mind and the ego, that material consciousness, wants certainty as soon as possible, which is the driving force behind grabbing at obvious clues, grabbing at something that you think, oh yeah, okay, that looks like lycopodium, or you know, like trying to get some certainty. You mustn't do that. You must just sit in that place of being the unprejudiced observer. That's what Adam really means by the unprejudiced observer. He's saying, be comfortable with that place of not knowing. And like with most cases these days, I probably take on average maybe 10, even 12 or more sides of A4. I write down everything. That's what Hahnemann did. Write down everything the patient says. And so that's important. You just write it down. And of course, then you underline the things. Me, I just spontaneously underline them. The things that are going deeper. You know, those words that are repeated, or that don't make sense, or they come in pairs of opposites, or that are strange. And then you look out for if the patient starts gesturing, that means they're going deeper into their state. So really, what are, all of those things are about trying to connect with the story behind the story, meaning the person's inner state. Because what needs to be healed in the person, we said earlier, are those deep subconscious roots. Like all chronic disease has roots deep in the subconscious mind. That's an incredible statement. All chronic disease, physical or psychological, has roots deep in the subconsciousness. And if you really embrace that idea, then it has profound consequences. It means that we're not trying to heal the outer person's outer circumstances, because anything that's done on the outer will just have a temporary benefit. As long as that inner state is there, it'll just, it's like snipping the heads off a weed. It'll grow back. So the story behind the story is what's in the patient's subconscious mind. That's what we really want to understand, if possible, and then give a remedy that relates to that. So it's about just being that unprecious observer, just sitting. I remember hearing Jonathan Shaw in London many years ago saying, I say to my patients, you've got to keep talking for the first 40 minutes. And he refused to talk. He said, okay, you have got to talk. I think that's maybe a little brutal, or, I'm slightly more gentle with my patients, but I say, I like people to keep talking. Anything else you want to say? Tell me everything that you feel I should know. And I also say, often those things that are most disturbing, most embarrassing, most strange are often the most important. So don't be afraid to tell me that. And actually, in the early days, I think I was a bit too serious and a bit heavy, probably a bit intimidating. But I think now that I'm a little more comfortable in myself, I'm more friendly and a bit more, it's good to be friendly and smile, maybe have a bit of a laugh about something. It's good because people say, oh, he's human,
Exactly. Yes.
It,
That's so true.
yeah.
That's so true. It's like when we started this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Here's a behind the scenes, okay? But when we started, it was like first meeting, but the mood lightens as soon as you just put some banter in, even almost,
Yeah.
it's they say laughter is the best medicine, but maybe in some few doses, not excessively as well, especially during a consult.
Yeah. It's just being natural, isn't it? It's going with what just feels right. I mean, that's coming from the soul. What is natural, what is common sense, just feels human, kind, kind to just go with that.
We were thinking with everything that we've discussed, it actually quite nicely takes us on to fish, because there is an upcoming book, Fish Remedies in Homeopathy, and then I have to say the cover is absolutely beautiful. Really, really nice. Actually, there's one thing which is really striking. I mean, the information and contents are fantastic. That's not, that's like, yeah, that's going to happen. But the fact that the covers are so appealing, aren't they? They're really, really nice. And I have arachnophobia, so the spider one, but I still got it. Hey, just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just
Don't
showing.
scare people now.
There you go. Doo-doo. Mine's at the back, so it's a bit of a smaller one. I can't handle
When
the
I got this book, my brother is scared of spiders. When I got this book, I took a closer picture and I sent it to him and said, "Why do you do that
That was cruel. That's a very
to
spidery thing to do.
me?" Isn't it? Isn't it? It's petrifying. Spiders are for me. Anyway, I digress totally. But takes us on to from the covers to the lateral thinking to the fish, and we talk about schools of fish and community and all their different tasks that they have from the marine life to just the salmon and the salmon race, the great salmon race. And so what drew you to that? What was that sort of link where you said, you know what, I want to look at this area as well as far as fish are concerned, and you know
How
how's
to
that?
go beyond sepia.
That's a really great question, Ati, and the answer is, as you might expect from me now, is like completely out of my hands. I'd never seen a fish remedy until maybe, I don't know, just before the pandemic, and I was invited to give a seminar in Brussels, organized by Bart Lambert, and I was staying with Anne Debisser, very nice, very good homeopathic doctor in Belgium, and she has a delightful family, six children. They live in this big rambling house, and one of her daughters was cooking us a delicious vegan meal, and for about 45 minutes I was on my own in their living room. There was one book, a homeopathic book, in the living room, and it was Victoria Bedrogi's Water World, which had just come out. And I thought, oh, I'm gonna have a look in there. And in that 45 minutes, I focused on the chapter, which was basically the common themes in fish remedies. And I simulated that. I thought, I'm going to use this time to, you know, simulate what Victoria has learned from her experience about, you know, the essence of fish remedies. And of course, I think it was the following Monday, my first fish patient walked into the clinic. And thanks to Victoria, I could recognize the language, and it just went from there. And you know, over the next months, lots more fish cases, and you know, for 2, 3 years, and that's the, you know, the material that led to that book. So it was like when I was sitting in that living room, I had this, it was like irresistible. I had to pick up that book and you know, just voraciously absorb that information. That was coming, you know, that was intuition. And when people say, you know, there's so much information, you know, all the webinars and seminars and books and podcasts and everything, you know, how do I choose? I say, use your intuition. Be guided by that. What you really feel attracted to, what you feel excited by, what just feels right, that's what you need to do. Because you can't read it all and study it all, but the really important thing I want to say is you don't have to. You're not meant to. All you have to do is assimilate that information that's going to be important for you. And yeah, there's some that we all need to know. You know, I would say you want to assimilate the common themes in the remedy groups. You know, looking at the periodic table. Just get an idea about the different stages, the different rows. Most of it's common sense. Same with the animal groups. You know, a lot of it's just stuff you know already. And it's fun. You know, and you can assimilate it because it's fun, because it's enjoyable, but because it makes sense. The mind has structures which will store those ideas away, and then, you know, going back to how do you find that unique remedy that Nina was asking a while ago in the consultation. If you have assimilated those common themes into your mind, and you don't have to read the hundreds of books, if you've assimilated those ideas, those common concepts, then your mind will automatically compute the data that's being dropped on you like an avalanche by your patient. And you know, you're underlining things, the peculiar things, when you're beginning to see some theme, and then suddenly there's going to be that click moment. You think, oh, this is a row four mineral. Or, oh, this looks like a wildcat, or whatever it is. And you think, where did that thought come from? It's because your mind has computed it for you, and you've been doing the rational work. There's no shortcut here. You know, I'm writing, dread to think how many thousands of words. Well, I don't dread to think. It's just, it's beautiful, but, 12, 14 sides of A4 in an hour and a half. You're just writing it all down. Because as you write it down, actually, that helps to absorb it into your mind.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And so, that's what happened with the fish. Just, and I think, yeah, there's some synchronicity there. I think, as we were saying earlier, there is some intelligent force at work. I think we help much more than we realize. It's been awesome for me that that's happened, that lots of different patients needing particular remedy group. It happens for 6 months or a couple of years, and then you don't see any for 5 years. But there's some other group that comes, and I mean, it's happened so much with the imponderable remedies for me in the last couple of years. And last weekend I was giving a webinar for this great group of Irish homeopathic vets and homeopaths. We were doing light remedies, mostly volcanoes and different remedies of light. And then my first new patient this week was just a lovely case of soul. It was like, I think the universe takes pity on me. It says, okay, but we'll send him an obvious one so he doesn't have to work too hard.
That's so fascinating, because I was also seeing different, like, I feel like the patients coming to my room are mostly in that transformational phase where I have to go and read more about insect remedies and butterfly remedies, and I'm not finding those books, and I'm so waiting for your book to come, actually.
It got bumped in the queue by the imponderables, but it is next.
I'm so waiting for it, I tell you, because I have explored the realm and I've written a blog about it just to put my thoughts together. And I'm going into, I have had two beautiful cases of butterfly remedies where they are feeling like they have to transform and they are stuck because of one reason or another. And yeah, I'm seeing that going in a really good direction. But staying with the fish remedies for the moment, because we often see a different kind of depth, or what we call nowadays fluidity or otherworldliness, described in fish remedy provings. Can you speak about that a little, or
yes,
what do you see? Yes,
it's interesting. Like fish people, they often have a. It depends a bit on what kind of fish remedy, but if you think about, watching a beautiful tank of tropical fish, and just how lovely that is, how calming it is, isn't it? And there's a slightly dreamy state. It's a kind of slightly floaty, slightly unreal, but it's very pleasant. And fish people can be a bit like that. Especially the kind of tropical fish, the more gentle fish, they can have a slightly dreamy voice and flowing movements, and very pleasant people. And if you ask a fish person to describe themselves, the majority of them, the first thing they'll say is, I'm a very positive person. Positive, optimistic, they tend to be cheerful, laughing. I mean, one or two exceptions, like Sira Magwali is definitely not, but although I've never, you never say never. Actually, I'm thinking one of my Sira Magwali patients, he's, well, very, very friendly, nice person, but they're positive, they have a positive outlook. And I think the reason for that, it's buoyancy. And that's the big overlap with bird remedies, which also have quality of buoyancy. They are supported by their medium. So birds, when they fly, they're held up by the air. Fish, when they swim, they're held up by the water. And that sense of buoyancy, is not just a physical experience. We talk about people having a buoyant mood, don't we? So fish people, there's this buoyant mood, and that seems to foster a positive aspect, attitude to life. I actually think there's a metaphysical cause for that, because I think that buoyancy means you're not just aware of your physical body, which means actually you're kind of spontaneously more in connection with the soul, which is innately positive. But anyway, whether that's the reason or not, the fish people, they have a tend to have that positive, joyful outlook on life. And the big sensation in fish people is moving forward, because fish are always moving forward, actually, or at least in relation to the water. They may be stationary in relation to the substrate, sand at the bottom or the bottom of the river, but the water is flowing past them in order to irrigate their gills. So they've got to be moving forward. They don't like obstacles. So the fundamental sensation is pushing forward, moving forward, getting somewhere, getting around obstacles or over obstacles. They don't block me.
So
And
wonderful.
the other, big theme is that dreamy state. It can, at an extreme, it moves towards being separated off, even, to the degree of autism, kind of just not connecting, and other aspects of mental dysfunction like dyslexia, dementia. It's like a disconnection of mind and body, or even a disconnection of the body itself, kind of looking for the correct word, deconstructing. So the feeling that the head's removed from the body or the limbs removed from the body, is a kind of merging into the water idea.
This is so interesting. Like when we think about the duality or the head, not the body, we usually think about Anacardium and those remedies. It could be actually the fish remedy group because there's something else going on. Another song is playing in their body that needs something else. So would you how would you differentiate then the because birds have similar type of themes than fish remedies. Where does the difference come? Like what is seen in the birds, which is not seen in the fish, or how
Yeah,
do we do that?
it's a very interesting comparison. There's significant overlap. And just to say a little more about the similarities before the differences, like fish people, when they go deep into their state of swimming sensation, they'll often describe it as flying, which can be confusing because, it feels the same. I've never seen it the other way around. I haven't had fish. The bird people talking about swimming, and so you need to be alert to that. But the one difference is that fish people, they'll talk about smooth, moving smoothly, which bird people don't. The theme of responsibility being due to the for birds, the fundamental conflict is between freedom and responsibility. Their problem is that, see, the point is It's alien consciousness, isn't it? What is a bird remedy person's problem is that they think they're a bird. What is a fish remedy person's problem? It's that they think they're a fish, or at least they see, they experience their life through the prism of fish consciousness or bird consciousness. So someone who is suffering real physical symptoms because she's tied down by her 97-year-old demented mother and can't get away, and it's unbearable for her. There's no solution to that until, in this case, I'm thinking of, she had Aramakau, which was her remedy, bird remedy. And then she comes back and she says, "It's okay. I can, this situation's not going to change for the foreseeable future, but now I'm okay with it. Now I don't feel I have to be able to go off at any time on long holidays painting, you know." And why has that happened? It's because that bird consciousness that thinks it should be free to do whatever it wants, whenever it wants, and fly everywhere has gone. And her human consciousness is reasserting itself. Not only that, she says, "Now I feel compassion for my mother." So it's like the alien song, the other song that Roshan Sankaran talks about. That's exactly right. Bird consciousness has been crafted onto her consciousness. It doesn't belong there. It's alien consciousness. You introduce that vibratory pattern, it cancels it out. That's homeopathy. You introduce an identical vibratory pattern. It's not, see, when someone needs, like that patient needs Aramakau, it's not that they have a bird-like consciousness or something like consciousness. They actually have that archetype of Aramakau is grafted onto their consciousness. And that's what we mean by the samilamam. It's not that actually somehow that archetype of Scarlet Macaw has entered into that person's consciousness. It is a form of possession. But, and when that is removed, then the human state can reassert itself. And so that polarity, that's the basic thing for birds. That, and why the birds suffer from responsibility is because they're very responsible people. You don't suffer from a sense of responsibility unless you feel it, and bird people, they tend to be spiritual, they tend to be very high-minded, very decent people, and therefore they're not going to go and leave their 97-year-old mother behind. So they are tied down by that. So that's their conflict. Part of them wants to do the right thing, part of them wants to be a bird. You can't do both. That's why you need the remedy. And those that, so free and responsibility, the number three, in my experience, quality of bird people is truth. The idea of speaking your truth. If you look in that rubric, a lot of bird remedies, but actually, it's a bit like the hurry, everybody must hurry in spider rubric. I would say every bird remedy needs to be in that, is to speak the truth. There's something fundamental about that. Again, I think it's to do with their spiritual nature, high-minded nature. It's like being authentic, being true to yourself. That's a really important theme in many bird cases. You'll see it. You'll see it. Really. And fish don't have that. They do have the conflict between responsibility and freedom, but they're more likely to just go off and do what they want. Whereas birds are more likely to allow themselves to be tied down. Fish people probably have slightly more irresponsibility, which again is an overlap with butterflies, which again, don't like responsibility, can be born out of an irresponsible background.
Interesting. There's Jan Cholton talks about the different personalities and how they're imprinted upon us. And there's a lot of there's echoes from what you're saying of that because of how one can become. We talk about birds and we talk about their focus on nests, you know, and making some of the smaller birds are so focused on their bit of teamwork maybe, but you know that has to be there and. That's like everything is to do with that nest, you know, from the food to the hatchlings and so on and so forth. And somebody can have that personality. It's amazing, isn't it? The human condition or human design that we have superficial personalities and yet we don't realize sometimes and we wonder who we are and you know, it how it changes us. Even just generally in life, like putting on a work hat, putting on a professor hat, putting on a lecturer hat, putting on an author hat, you know, it changes how thought processes are. And it's so beautifully illustrated in themes from the fish to the bird to all the other kingdoms as such, you know, it's wonderful. Loving this conversation.
I think it is awesome. I think we get an, you know, in homeopathy, when we study the remedies and see cases of people actually channeling these archetypal energies, it's awesome. It's a window into the subtle realms that create and sustain a material world. It's even a window into how it's created, you know, how that infinite, unfathomable absolute consciousness has created a material world for human beings to evolve in and is absolutely awesome. You see these archetypes, and when you study the animal kingdom and you see what the lives of an animal are like, how intense they are, that battle for survival, it just leaves you breathless. It's You know, and we're part of that whole unfathomable material world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio. Or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So beautiful that we tend to learn all this through homeopathy. Like we get to know the depth and the soul and the core experience. Like just imagine someone else thinking about how Aramakau will look like if it was a human. And then they tied with their mother or with young children. I'm just imagining a bird remedy, and they have younger children and they want to go on a holiday, and just imagine them carrying all the children and, "I have to go, I have to fly." That's so, such a huge burden on their own being. And then they will feel exhausted afterwards. But there is some urgency. I have to do it. And then bringing them
Well,
back is.
in a way, every remedy is the state is the same, and it creates a tension between the state of that remedy and one's pure human consciousness. That in a conflict, like, am I this or that? And as long as, the human consciousness is not able to express itself purely, really, we're talking about the soul consciousness, then there'll be a conflict. That in a way, all the disquiet we feel inside is because of not expressing the soul perfectly. Because we're the soul. The soul is perfect and it wants to experience and express purity of its state. And our human angst is caused by not doing that. Every kind of conflict or disharmony we experience is because of not expressing the soul purely.
It's so profoundly deep, isn't it? And it just showcases, I always say, that the life of a homeopath and the training involved, this is over and above any formal training, of course. Or should I rephrase that and say over and above the formal training? Once you are have qualified, it's a lifelong journey, but it's not just here's my symptoms and there you go, see you later. But it's so much, that connection is so deep, isn't it? And you can swim, for want of a better word, as a fish. You can fly with them, you can swim with them, you can just stroll with them. And it's just such a wonderful thing, isn't it, to be able to have that journey. But as homeopaths, it's not just the remedies, it's the life force. We talk about the soul, we talk about being unbiased, we talk about observing, we talk about intuition, we talk gut feelings, and everything all together, all at once, and it's processing. You said something so beautiful, I absolutely loved it, which is about how the brain is working, and intuitively the remedy will pop in. Sometimes it could be the last thing a patient actually says, and you think, oh my God, there you go. And certainly myself and Nyla have been in these situations, with consults, haven't we? And you see that happen. It's just it's so exciting, isn't it? It's like, what is there not to get excited about, right? It's just so fantastic and expansive and all-encompassing, and you're learning so many different things, and the brain is processing, and then you're able to match an energy signature with the energy of a patient and resonance.
It is so exciting, and but I'm mindful also. I mean, agony and ecstasy. I find homeopathy is it reaches the heights and it plumbs the depths in terms of, when it's good, it couldn't be better. But when it's bad, it's torture, isn't it? And because I wouldn't want anyone to think that I find homeopathy easy, or it's always plain sailing for me. Yes, there are good days, but there are also days when you really, every case seems to be difficult, and that no one gets everyone better. I think I've never met a homeopath who didn't question themselves and think, oh, I'm no good at this, and everyone's better than me. Don't go there, people. And it's, yes, we need to work hard to, do our best. But one thing I would really say to encourage you is do a clinical audit. Because I guarantee to you that when you do a clinical audit, I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute, you'll find that you're doing much better than you think. And there's a reason for that. A clinical audit is like very, you can use the Glasgow Homeopathic Outcomes score. You can get that from the Faculty of Homeopathy. It's very simple. You just give it to patients, they score how they are, plus zero, no better to plus four, which is, complete cure, or minus four. Hopefully you're not going to give too many of those. But and then, after a few months they give it back to you. Or no, they can just score it having anyway, you can get it from the faculty. You will find that you're doing much better than you think because the patients who do really, really well, how often do you see them? Not so often. And sometimes most people stop their homeopathic treatment too soon. Unfortunately, when they're not hurting anymore, when the pain's gone, it's a shame because if they persevere, often, things really, they expand their horizons. But anyway, so, and you say, okay, we'll see you in 3 months, or when they're doing really well. Patients who are not doing so well, you see much more often. So if you're getting maybe 50% of your patients better, which I would say is really good, considering the kind of patients who we see these days, who are often got multiple pathologies, they've been ill for a long time, they've had treatments of all kinds, conventional, others, and they're not better. Ugh, they're in a state. If you're getting 50% of those people better, you're doing well. But you're going to be spending 80, even 90% of your day with the 50% who are not getting better. So you, at the end of the day, you're going to feel like rubbish and that you're no good. That's the brutal reality of some days in homeopathy. I may be exaggerating a little bit, but I just want to make the point that it's very easy to feel you're not good, when actually you are.
It's the best people I've certainly learnt from, and to speak for Nyla as well here, actually, is the ones that when they present cases, they also tell you about where the cases didn't work and where the prescription didn't work. And that's real learning because it's grounded,
It
it's real,
is.
you can touch it because it's human. We spoke about being human. And being able to speak. It's so nice, isn't it, to be able to do that rather than give the golden nugget ones always,
I think here it to be energy resonance as well. Like your energy will resonate with the people, and those people will walk into your doors and will get the energetic remedy that they need and will get better and will refer other people to you. But then there will be some who do have this energy resonance, but they are also stuck in their patterns and they might need some more time to move forward. And as homeopaths, we tend to be very self-critical. That's why we are in this profession, because we have looking everything in an analytical way. This doesn't work or this doesn't work. And then we tend to break ourselves in, why can't I help this person? Because we have this deep desire to get them better. And sometimes if a case is stuck, it just stays with us. And this is so beautiful what you said. Do this clinical analysis. I think that that's what we need to do as homeopaths.
You do your best and then let it go. That's humility. And
Beautiful.
the fact is, some people, because of their karma, actually it's not time for them to heal. I say that cautiously because, we have to do our best to try and help them. And everything is karma. So if they get better, it's their karma too. So you can go around in circles there too. But the point is, I'm sure it is the case that with the best will in the world, sometimes for some reason, people have to go through something and it's not time for them to heal. I believe that's the case. One, I have to go shortly, but one thing I'd like to say, so is that, Atik mentioned, the cases that don't go well. I agree, it's good to do that in the teaching, but don't, whatever you do, have a day where you all bring your difficult cases. I remember when early on when we were doing the sensation method, we had a group called Sensation. We'd all get together, and it was great, when we were learning how to work that way. And then one day somebody said, let's have a day when we all bring, cases that are not. It wasn't the worst day of my life, but it was definitely top 10. It was just so awful because we didn't solve any of them, of course, because they were just, insoluble. And at the end of the day, we all felt completely beaten up. So it's not a good idea. Yes, it's good, in a seminar or webinar to talk about your failures and where things, didn't go right in the case. But anyway, you don't want to spend a whole day on that.
We can absolutely. That's like, we can't talk about it. We can talk about cases. We can talk about outcomes. We can. What is a solved case as well?
Yeah,
It is different for
exactly.
every person.
And well, it's never over. It's because who knows what the next layer is, and we're here to change and evolve. And a great sage, an enlightened sage was asked by somebody, does spiritual evolution ever end? And he said, no, because the goal is you become one with endlessness. And so, it's never truly over. They're all, when you present a case, it's always a kind of snapshot of, where someone is at a certain time.
The profound summit of evolution, hey?
Thank you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you, Dr. Jonathan Hardy. We have actually recorded two episodes. It was such a beautiful conversation with you, and we would love to meet you again. Hopefully, we can also think about bringing you to the wider community because there's so much to learn from you.
So
And
much.
we'll end our today's episode with something that you said before we started recording, that let's try to, similar remedy is good. Similimum is miraculous. Let's try and strive to find that similimum. But similar will be good enough. If we
It's
can.
been
It's
an
a pleasure.
absolute honor, isn't it, for us? It's absolutely so good. And of course, we are going to remain very, very closely in touch, because there's more exciting, ladies and gentlemen, many, many more exciting things to come. Okay. And that was Dr. Jonathan Hardy.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure for me to spend this time with you, Atik and Nyla, and you're both beautiful people. It's been so nice to talk with you. Thank you for everything you're doing for homeopathy.
Thank you. Pleasure is all ours. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.